Welcome to the November 20th, 2019 Cambria Community Healthcare District meeting. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a quorum, just. We are missing two board members, but we have three. I wanted to just take a moment to thank the staff and the administrator for all the things that they do. They work so hard, and it is Thanksgiving, as we all know. And I just felt like it was a nice time to say, we know it's been a challenging few months getting oriented and adjusted, and just wanted to say thank you to the whole staff that's out there every day as well.
Much appreciated.
Is there any public comment for items not on the agenda? Okay. So the consent agenda we shall move to, and we have the minutes of the October 20th meeting, the minutes of the ambulance activity report, and the financials and budget analysis. We can pull any for questions, or we can approve all three things or one thing at a time, as you wish.
Move that we accept the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 3-0. Thank you very much. And so we shall move to the administrator's report. Mike.
Thank you. Page 28 in your packet. Really, administrator's report, brief on we had just some minor changes with the to note of the SBRMA. Made a change in the risk management subcontractor services. It does not appear to affect us at all, other than just a
Mike, you might want the microphone by you.
Oh.
I couldn't hear Barbara very well.
I don't think you're. Do we know how to turn them on? It's my cabinet.
Why don't we just be quiet?
I can project. How's that? I will.
As long as you can hear it on the table.
Yeah. Oh, Simone moved it over here. So, update on the trust. Oops. On the trust project. Been working with the local bank, the Pacific Premier. Staff there has been very helpful, and we're moving forward with establishing an account for the trust. I turned in some documents this morning to them. I believe that's the last bit that they need, other than they'll need to talk to Barbara one last time. I think they're going to have a document for you to sign. But looks like it's moving ahead nicely. And there's also a form that needs to be turned into the IRS. It's called a 1023 application for our tax, the trust tax exempt status. I've got that document, and I'm working on it now to make that happen. We also did receive our EIN number, the employer identification number for the trust, so we have that document as well from the IRS. And the 1023 application, my understanding is that once that's in process, it takes perhaps several months to get that back from IRS, but that does not preclude us from our trust activities. It's okay that's in process. You don't have to wait for that. So good news, everything looks like it's going well. I also worked on the EMS billing review process, which is in a later, I'll kind of skip to the, we'll talk about that later in the agenda in more detail. I also began a process to get us approved, or myself as the administrator and the district approved, to be able to receive surplus equipment from the federal and state agencies. For example, if we were to want to procure a larger generator that would power our whole building instead of the small one that we currently have that would be used for just essential services, those are obviously kind of a big ticket item, but they are available through this program, and we are eligible to receive that type of equipment. And there's many, many other things. They have tens of thousands of items that are available to us in that process. So I've begun that paper process to get that taken care of. I also completed there's a FEMA grant administrator where I'm designated as the administrator for FEMA grants. It's through what they call the SAM process and the DUNS registration. We had a prior account that had become dormant because it just hadn't been used for a period of time. And I got all that reactivated and processed so that we can, if we receive any FEMA or those type of grants, we have what we need. I also began a process of applying for the district to enter into an agreement with FEMA or FEMA's contractor for disaster response teams. It's a program that currently the American Medical Response is contracted to FEMA to provide disaster relief or disaster response teams, what they call ambulance strike teams, all over the country for hurricanes, tornadoes, natural and man-made disasters. And they have an enormous amount of resources, but they do not have enough resources to handle all of the needs. So they subcontract to the smaller entities out there, and we can get on that list as well. And that's how I've begun that paper process. And basically what that would do is if there were to be a disaster in, say, California, natural or man-made, and the resources were called for additional ambulance and EMT and paramedic resources, we'd be on the list. And we would deploy, similar to what the fire services do when they do their mutual aid for large-scale fires and so forth. The only impact to the district would be a loss of resources while they were gone, and I would monitor that carefully to make sure that we did not send out more than we could afford to send out as far as coverage and so forth. But in talking with our operations director, he feels confident that we have enough personnel, and we would, if need be, commit one reserve ambulance to that, depending on availability. But it would be allocated out to this system. As far as financial impact, the resources would be, we would be reimbursed for their use. And it's considerably more than it would cost us, let's put it that way. So we would not lose money on the process. It would actually be beneficial financially for us to do so. So that would put us into that system. May never happen, but if it does, we'd be ready to go. We'd have everything ready. Oh, question on that?
Well, we filed and we're part of the local hazard mitigation plan.
Mm-hmm.
With the fire department. Does that fit under that disaster response team network effort?
Good question, and no, it does not. That system is for local emergencies within our general area, the county, and so forth. This would be on a grander scale. If the state or federal government took over the incident, then it would elevate to that level, and they'd start calling in these state and federal resources, which we would be part of that. So it's similar, but it's for larger scope events. And sometimes they start small, and then they balloon, much like the fires. They start out as a local incident, and then they grow sometimes to where it's a state incident or a federal incident.
Okay.
and the associated funds as well. When you hear the governor or the president doing a declaration of a state emergency or a federal emergency, what that does is open the door for funding from the state and the federal government. So it's a very robust system. The other thing, let's see, where was I did respond to some public requests for information from two people. One was a public representative, Julie Tacker, and I, as it states here in my report, I referred her all of the documents that she requested. And also we got another request from a Shaquille Cruz from Transparent California, and it just has to do with a 2017 and 18 employee compensation report that we are in the process of getting him additional data. He had been sent a previous report, but it was incomplete, and the staff is now addressing that the missing data that he wants, and he's at this point satisfied. He's happy with what we're doing. We've been communicating with him quite well.
Just a window that we're okay with, the legal window that's required.
Yes, on the first one, on Julie Tacker, yes, and then on the second one, we were outside the window for what we were missing, but he's allowed for that. He says that he's satisfied that we're now working diligently to satisfy it, and he's given us plenty of time to do that.
And the information you give him related to Transparent California.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be possible to give that data to the board as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. I can note myself here. Okay. Very good. I also signed an agreement an approval of a new county health policy on infectious disease outbreaks and quarantine. Reviewed the document. It's very thorough, and all of the agencies in the county, first response agencies, have been asked to sign it as approving the document, which I did. And then there's an update on the parking lot project, but I kind of like to defer that as it's an agenda item, and we can get into more detail there. And then we do have the district activity report, which kind of ties in with Tim's report on operations.
Any questions?
Thus far?
No.
Okay, I think that ends my administrator's report.
Thank you very much.
Oh, well, question from the...
Jody McDonough, resident of Cambridge. For the FEMA disaster response team, we are going to put the employees through in order to make them even more qualified.
Absolutely. Yes, there is some training involved along with this disaster response team. I can work with Tim on the details of that. The good thing with that, as far as impacting the district, is that it's at no cost to the district. The training is provided. The cost is borne by FEMA, essentially. So.
Hi, Tim. Welcome.
Hi. Sorry I'm late.
No worries. You got here just at the perfect time for you to give your report. How did you possibly orchestrate that?
It's perfect timing.
Maybe the snowball's finally stopped. Stopped rolling. So on my report, I wanted to go over a couple of things involving the station. Unfortunately, I know we spent a large deal of money getting the C-suite rewired. We have found out, though, that with the cold weather coming in, that if people run heaters, we're still having the electrical problem. So if somebody there are two rooms that don't have heaters built into the wall. So if somebody's running a floor heater off of one of those two rooms, and somebody turns on the coffee pot, the microwave, or something like that, we're still tripping a breaker. The crews are really working with each other on that. They're saying, hey, you know, I got to cut something, so everybody's... We're working together to get through this because we understand, you know, the financials. But I just wanted to make you guys aware that that's going on. So if you hear any talk of it, we're aware of it. We're working through it. The old Medic 11 quarters, which is the old building, Mike and I have talked numerous times about it. I know that when Steve was here, the initial plan was to get rid of the storage at Tin City and move everything into that building. But I've made a big push against that. One, because if we lose the storage at Tin City, it'll take us a long time to get it back.
You'll never get it back.
Yeah. Really? They're real popular, apparently, in short demand.
I've been waiting this
or high demand
for 3 years.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So I think that it would be better off for us to actually, we've been going through and getting rid of old stuff that we don't need anymore. In that, but I think it would be more suitable to move the records and everything that we currently have down to Tin City, because eventually the Medic 11 building is going to go away. We know that it's not habitable, it's not safe. There's some rot in it, there's mold growing in certain areas. So I think it would behoove us to actually work on cleaning that out so that when the time comes and it goes away, we don't have to make a mad rush to get it done. And we also don't, like Bill said, be on a waiting list trying to figure out where we're going to store stuff. There's plenty of room in Tin City. There's a bunch of stuff in there that needs to go away, like old CTI stuff, uniforms, a couple old computer towers, and just miscellaneous junk. So we're going to work on getting that cleaned out, and if it's okay with the board, I think it would behoove us to move the older stuff that we need to hang on to but don't need quick access to back down there. Because it's going to be safer, it's dry in there, you know, the floor floods. If we actually get any decent rain, if you're looking at the building, the whole right side and the living room area will flood again. So having stuff in there is actually just not, it's not smart.
I did never hear that there was a flood in the old building, I will have to say. There was some floor damage, which self-healed. It was reported to FEMA, and then when FEMA came, it was gone.
Yeah, because the wood swelled, the planking had swollen, and then by the time they got here...
It was only like a plank and a half or so. But anyway, it's a material. I mean, it's not going to be...
The problem is the damage that's in the walls, the corner, if you go by and actually touch... It's not just from last year or the year of the rain when the hillside slid. It's been an ongoing problem because... If you look at it, where 19 is currently sitting, it's actually about 2 inches higher than the foundation. If you walk around to the front where the parking area is, you can see that there's a great difference. So all that water just comes right into the station because water goes downhill. So, unit 18 and 20 are both in service. We're putting up some pretty good the miles are about average for it. We've had no issues with either one. 16 and 17 are still backups. They're fully stocked and ready to go with the FEMA grant disasters, if a unit breaks. We have had no issues with that. We are. I have implemented the crews now once a month. They're going through and checking all the meds. We're moving any medication that's going to expire within 6 months out of those units. And putting stuff, because most of our medication is a year to a year and a half out, that medication that is going in those units and the other medication that's expiring sooner goes into our first out units, so that if we have a call, we can hopefully use it there and actually not just throw it away. Any questions on that? We had... there's a slight increase in the responses for the district. We're getting a little busier, as you can see on the run report and the activity report. It's not much, but it's a little busier. Unfortunately, it seems like the most of the calls are happening more and more at night. The crews are getting busier at night. We had a couple of calls that took 3 minutes to get in line. They say it took 3 minutes to go or longer to go and route to the call. Four of them in the middle of the night, and the time allotted is actually 3 minutes, so they're right there at that 3 minute mark. That's where they're flagged. One of them was during the day, still marked. It was a Monterey County call. the crew used the restroom. I asked what happened. They went to the restroom, and I know because it was one of the other, it was actually my call, and we had to go north of Gorda, and so we stopped to use the restroom before we headed out. And the whole time, in case anybody was curious, it was 3.5 hours from the time that we left the station until we got to the hospital, got back into the area. And it was 3 hours before we even got from the time that we were dispatched until we got to the hospital was 3 hours. So that's why there was a little bit of delay. It was a crew needed break because we knew the time frame that we were looking at. On 19-10-81, the crew listed a delay for road construction. Apparently there was a piece of equipment in the roadway that had to be moved before they could get around it.
So it has to do with the roads being resurfaced right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are park hills having that done.
So there was, yeah. Then the only way we had to wait for them to move it so we could get through. We did have two Monterey County calls. Both of them have been billed. I was asked about winter response by the crews and by also Mike, so I gave a brief description of what would happen. As you guys all know, occasionally Caltrans shuts down the highway. If they shut down the highway, I watch the news in the wintertime. I get the emails from Caltrans when they're going to shut it down. Just north of Ragged Point, there's actually a big metal gate that they close. Same thing on the other side of the slide. In the event that they're going to close the highway, we just explain to MedCom that the highway's closed. They're aware of it, but we give them a reminder, and Monterey has to send the unit down. We can't get past Ragged Point. If it was a life or death emergency, someone's in, and there shouldn't be anybody in that area unless they busted through the gate.
Or if they came from the other way.
No, because what happens is CHP and Caltrans actually go down and they lock the gate behind them, and then they push anybody through the next gate, and then they lock that gate.
There's a segment of the highway, and they do this preemptively. If they have a report there's a big storm coming, yeah. There may not be a slide, but they're doing it as a
preemptive. It's really that big 9 mile slide where they took out the whole.
Yeah.
There's one house in there, but it's a vacation rental, so.
So we're okay.
Yeah. So that's that one. The other thing that I, on winter responses, is I'm trying to work with CAL FIRE and our and that on how we would handle that. We had one incident where Denise actually responded to Pacific Valley School, which is in Monterey County, but it's a dirt road all the way up. So going up wasn't a problem for the unit. If it had been rainy and wet, neither of our units would have made it up to the school because it requires four-wheel drive. And the downside to that is it requires a four-wheel drive pickup because the road is overgrown right now and the fire truck couldn't even make it up the road. So,
and they have a school there?
There's a school up there.
So how did they get them out?
They take a little four-wheel drive pickup truck up and down like a school.
Could you transport a patient in that pickup?
We would be violating county policy if we did.
Well, but if somebody's life is...
If it's a life or death situation, we can do it, but we're going to have to explain it very thoroughly to the EMSA.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike asked me, I'm not sure if he covered his financial report, the increased costs for the medications.
Not yet.
Oh.
So I haven't done that part yet.
Okay.
But that's okay.
So you'll notice that in last month there was an increase in medications because we had medications expiring, unfortunately. I gave Mike a heads up also in December we'll have another issue with that because all of our IO needles, which is our interosseous drill needles that we use, they expire in January of next year
and
also.
And they run about $100 a piece?
$110 a piece. To save on money with that, we've actually cut back on one of the sizes. We've eliminated. We used to carry three sizes, and now we only carry two. Because the one we cut out the middle one that was kind of it would work either. It was kind of an either or size, so we either have one for adults or we have one for pediatrics.
Now we had talked a little bit about the potential of doing some either joint purchasing with San Luis Ambulance for medications to get the prices down per unit. Or working in some other direct way with Boundary. Is that going to be on the agenda soon?
Yes. And I've talked to Brian a little bit. We have been working with Fire with that too. So like on this order with the IO needles, Fire picks up, Fire and I, because we bought them at the same time last time, we split the cost. And they had to actually purchase a new drill gun, and they covered the cost of that. So it'll be the same thing again this way. We only order enough to keep just a minimal amount in stock.
So what I experienced in the hospital industry is that whole hospital chains would gather together to get the best possible price per unit on these things, and mm-hmm. they actually created this whole system to do that. I know we don't have that, but that's why moving beyond not just the fire department, but also perhaps the ambulance happens, we could get the volume discount that would take us to...
We get a pretty significant discount from Boundary and Life Assist right now. We get, even though we don't buy as much as Endless Ambulance, we actually get their pricing, because they buy three times as much as we do. So we do get a pretty good discount, but I'll talk to Brian and see if we can work something out. We are working with the fire department, though, on stuff like that. And that's something that starting in January, we won't be... There's certain medications that we used to buy, be able to buy single, like sodium bicarb, calcium. We used to be able to buy one or two at a time. The manufacturer now will not allow the distributors to sell them that way. They want them to be sold in lots of 10. So that's something that both the fire department and us, we've been talking about, because we're going to have a bunch of stuff expire. So we are working to try and figure out how to make it work so we can both get the items we need but not kill the medication budget.
You bring up a good point, too. I'm familiar with talking about the hospitals, how they purchase that way. I'm actually working on getting us an account with what's called a SAVIC group. And a large group of ambulance providers in the country did the same thing. They've kind of come together, and they have this SAVIC group where they can get the larger scale buying power, and we can purchase through them. We can become an approved, or we would be approved in their system. So I'm working on that as well. It'll help some of that.
The other thing, I don't know how EMS at county level would respond to this conversation that I'm also thinking of, but in the hospital industry, sometimes those conversations go directly to the drug manufacturer to say, does this expiration date mean that it is absolutely expired?
So I had a very long conversation with Dr. Renee on that. Unless there is a national shortage of a drug, they cannot issue an exemption for the expiration date printed on the medication.
And they have, on occasion, done that when there's been a national shortage declared.
Can you educate me on why these intraosseous needles expire?
They have an expiration date on them.
Because almost everything that's in the medical field, except for gloves, now has an expiration date.
It's
a piece of metal wrapped in plastic. I understand.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's my question. Is it plastic? Is there something that's not going
to... The FDA says that it has to have an expiration date.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, even OPAs and MPAs, which are plastic and rubber, that we use for airway, have expiration dates. And those things will last for years before they get hard and brittle.
Sterile water has an expiration date.
It sounds like I'm trying to push the envelope beyond safety, and I'm not. But I know that if maybe we could just sit down and talk to Dr. Bornstein about it at the top level, because the truth of the matter, according to the science, is that those expiration dates are not as related to science as they are to the model that the people who make the drugs use to ensure viability for their company.
Absolutely.
So it might be an interesting issue. I don't think it's something that's going to give us a positive impact immediately, but to talk about having maybe somebody at Dr. Bornstein's level talk to the drug manufacturers and the needle manufacturers about what is realistic given what the science says about the production of those things. Because some hospitals do extend the expiration dates based on that science and the knowledge that they are indeed safe.
I understand that. And I brought it up to Dr. Renee, who's our medical director for the ambulance side of things. He works in conjunction with Penny. He said that as it stands right now, they cannot do it unless it's on a national level. And I will be more than happy to reach out to Penny and see what she says about that. But I wouldn't put any hope into getting an extension.
Do we give them away to Mexico or something?
We can't. We can't even give them to Cuesta College. They have to be disposed of legally.
Yeah, that used to happen, but now they go.
We used to be able to use them for training and stuff like that. And
some places are having
the FDA has clamped down on that really hard.
Well, in some places, they're actually having to pay to have those disposed of, those expired things. And Tim's been working with the local pharmacies to help prevent that cost for us. They're willing to help us take some of those expireds and not, you know, we don't have to pay the hazardous materials disposal fee that some places charge. So it's a complex issue. It's a big issue, and I want to work with Tim on it some more. And even building it into our expected increase of cost of providing service, some places have built that those costs of those specific items. Some drugs are, for example, when they expire, they're used very infrequently until they tend to expire, and they're hundreds of dollars to replace per vial. Yeah. And we may want to look at that into our pricing structure, because some places actually charge specifically for those individual items that are expensive, like IO needles. If you do an intraosseous, there's an additional fee on the bill for that because it's such a big ticket item.
Do they tend to be reimbursable by insurance?
That's what I have to check out. I need to explore and find out how that works. So I don't know yet.
Thank you. Good discussion.
Yes.
I hope I wasn't rude or standoffish.
No.
Okay.
Good stuff.
So Halloween, we actually got Medic 12 to participate at the grammar school in the downtown event, which was a blast. People loved it. And we made it to the health fair. Unfortunately, we were a little bit late due to a slight clerical error on my part of the times, but we were able to get out some very good information and talk to some people.
I had a quick question about the data you gave us on page 8 of the packet with the incident numbers and times and all that. I was actually looking to see about the night shift ambulance challenges.
Did you get the information that it would have been an additional event?
I got that. I wasn't sure exactly what that was or what
the last one that came out was from. That was actually from San Luis Ambulance, because in the process of trying to pull our numbers.
Are you talking about the one in the board packet?
Yeah, it should have been an addition. It should have been an addendum.
I got an addition today. It didn't have a title on it, I wasn't sure exactly.
Yeah, so the addendum that you got today with the numbers, it should have been three pages. So it looks like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is, you requested at the last meeting to get a list of all of the calls that San Luis Ambulance has responded to for the last year. Yeah. That's all of the calls that San Luis Ambulance has responded to within the last year into Cambria between the hours of 8 o'clock at night and 8 o'clock in the morning. It tells you the location, whether it was a code 3 or code 2 call, and whether or not they were transported or not.
When it says call hours, I didn't understand that call. The last call.
That's a San Luis Ambulance number for their tracking system.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
Okay, as long as I wasn't supposed to understand.
No, that's totally, that's a San Luis Ambulance tracking number that I don't know about.
So when you look at this, you're the expert on this.
Mm-hmm.
What does this tell you about our night shift coverage that the board should have?
It's a little bit challenging. It's not enough to say that we need a second ambulance at night. But it could, I'd have to look at it a little more deeply. I mean, right now for me, honestly, looking at numbers and knowing how we're sitting with the budget and everything, I don't think it's enough to say we definitely need the night ambulance back. But it is troubling because San Luis is getting busier. Their call volume is increasing exponentially, and they're running into staffing problems. So this is for the last year, and they had really good staffing for the last year, but now they're running into staffing problems where they're unable to actually staff ambulances, much like we were when right after Jason left.
So they don't have as many resources as they could.
Would it meet the board's agreement to request at your convenience for the two of you to
consider a report on the night shift ambulance impact issues and answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be helpful because we've had some conversations, and I want to get some more data through Tim on because not only this report's interesting, but I don't think it provides all the information we need to look at. One thing I'm concerned about is, and this is anecdotal at this point, I don't have hard data, but I've just noticed from monitoring the radio and so forth that it seems like our unit is, because we have that mutual aid move-up policy where we cover for them, they cover for us. It appears that we're starting to do cover for them more frequently than we have in the past, and they're covering for us less than they have in the past, and our unit is getting pulled into Morro Bay or Templeton or even Paso Robles, they had a call that direction. So I'm concerned that the draw, the pendulum is shifting more in their direction, and I'm not blaming them. It's just maybe a fact, but I want to verify that.
Then we get reimbursed for those calls, but right, we're pulled out of our area, and then right, we open up our town to longer response times.
Yeah, sure. And at night, especially at night, I'm hearing just anecdotally from the crews, they're spending a lot of time at night on these move-ups, which technically they're still available to us, but at a distance.
Is it affecting our night shift response time in Cambria?
That I don't know yet. Are they responding back into town for a call from
within our guidelines?
And how is that affecting it? So yes, we need to make a more careful analysis on these suspicions.
So when would you feel you could put that on the agenda? Probably December would be too soon.
January maybe?
I would say January, yeah.
And that way we could do year end. We could do 12 months calendar year data and okay, comparison.
Thank you very much.
So if you look at the the activity report. The district activity report, page 2. It looks like it's this one right here. Oh, sorry. It doesn't have a...
Oh, that's...
Let's see if it's going to be...
Utilization of the ambulance report. Activity report.
Activity report.
It's... In my packet, it's page 29.
So, yeah, page...
I believe that's the same as page number.
29,
yeah.
So Jeremy has made a pretty good effort. You can see that SLAS has actually moved up to Cody 45 times versus San Luis coming in 18 times, and that's just for the month of October.
Mm.
So there is a definite increase in how many times we've had to go in and help San Luis Ambulance cover their areas. You're on the next page.
Page 30.
Well, thank you. Any questions for Tim from that excellent discussion? Thanks for your work. And Mike, you're on for the financial
report. All right. Turn the page here. Financial report documents starts on page 9 of your packet, and then there's some detail that's in the supplementals that we sent out subsequent to that, but I'll try to provide a fair guide through this process. One of the things on that page of the budget analysis on page 9, I wanted to note for October, ambulance revenue was up. And I talked with Tim, and he believes partially that's because of an increase in call volume. So call volume is up as well. And there's two things I can point to. It would appear that in just the month of October, we started to realize some benefit from our new staff, from Simone. She, even though Profit Max does the billing, she's tracking down some of these claims that come in or have issues. and so she's starting to follow up with insurance companies and patients and so forth. And already I'm seeing an uptick in that based on performance. So I think that's affecting it as well. We had several, just for example, we had Kaiser was one of the payers. We had several good sized payments come in from them and some other places. So that's helping. And then if you go down on the same page to Medicare, the under expenses.
Mike,
oh, I'm sorry, I skipped.
Go back to the new report, the month of.
The month of.
Report.
The next page is page 10.
This was a part of the addendum that was sent out.
Uh-huh.
So it's an unnumbered.
Yeah.
You should have two, really. One says the month of October, and then a second one that says.
Oh, got it. Month of October. And then 4 months of October. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you use this document now that I think all the board members have it, which is the month of October, and go down and talk a little bit about the major variances as we go down.
Gotcha.
And what was driving those.
And Bill brings up a good point, just to, by the way, we're looking to revise some of this reporting in future packets. We've got that report we were just looking at, and now this one, they duplicate, and it's unlikely that we really need both reports, and we may transition to this, or likely to transition to just using this summary report. It's
this
a lot easier.
The budget and actual
exactly. So that's we're working on making that happen. So yes, going to where was I? At the top. So at the top, we're looking at month of October by itself.
Okay.
And one of the variances that pops off the initial one was the increase in ambulance revenue I just addressed. The general tax, you'll notice that the budget amount was about $46,488 and actual was $88,360. Not that we went out and collected more tax from the general tax, but right below it, there's under special assessment, there's no figure. And that's because we just had an error in our accounting. We put them all together. We put both the special assessment tax and, in with the general tax, and that's why it jumped up so high and why special assessment is so low. So we've corrected that, or we will correct that for the next go-around. But that's why you see that disparity there. The next one down that I noted, administration, you notice we budgeted 16,416 and our actual was less at 10,834, variance of 55,82. I attribute that to the change in staffing. Heidi Holmes-Nagy retired and was off the payroll, and we have, during the month of October, we had a temp agency person that we paid for under a different wage structure. So that dropped our cost from budgeted because we're not paying for Heidi's position anymore.
What happened to the rent?
Let me see. Where am I? Oh.
On the top. Yeah.
From 3518 to 3217, variance of 31. I'm not sure why that went down, why that's below budgeted amount.
The I think the 3518, we get some minor amount of money from the Lollaberry Inn.
Oh, yeah.
Across the street. Is it 300 a month or 300 a quarter?
It's a...
Ten.
Okay, and that's why we had budgeted that.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's see, where else did... part-time, full-time paramedic and EMT operations was almost spot-on. It was over $152. Part-time was less, and speaking with Tim, we didn't use as many part-timers. Our full-time staff did not take, during that month, did not take significant vacation or sick time, which we would fill in with part-time. And we only have one part-time position.
One open shift that we fill with part-time.
Right. On a regular basis.
And that's just an EMT shift. So all of our paramedic shifts are currently filled with full-time paramedics. And if everybody shows up for work, it's not perfect.
So that was a cost savings.
For next week.
Yeah.
What's that?
How's it look for next week?
Oh, for Thanksgiving? Do we have people taking...
I don't have any open shifts. I just have one EMT who's trying to find coverage. But because Thanksgiving Day is a blackout day, I've made it a policy that they, if they want the day off, they have to find their own coverage.
They shift trade.
Right.
So. Yeah. And then there was another variance that popped up, caught my eye, was under Medicare, budget $1,800, and actual was zero. And we figured out that that was due to a payment that we make for Bob Sayers for his insurance, and it just wasn't put in the right column. We didn't populate that that piece. And then under liability auto insurance, we had a fairly large increase of $2,735 due to the new unit. The insurance bill for the new unit came in and was paid. So that accounts for that. And then office supplies had a $2,500 roughly increase in budgeted amount, and that was in relation to the change that we're doing in the office arrangement. We've got the part-time bookkeeper on board, and Simone, we purchased some furniture to accommodate that arrangement, and computer equipment to make everything work properly, licensing for software, things of that nature. So that was a brief spike in cost due to the change in structure that we're doing to facilitate the new system that we're going to talk about in a later agenda item. But my belief is that will be money well spent in the return that we get from that investment.
We also had to a large portion of that in regards to computers is we had to upgrade Heidi's computer because hers was on such an old software as of January it would no longer function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's several things like that going on that are sundowning in the software world.
So question, you said
yes.
Legal.
Yes.
I just wanted the board to know that this does not reflect what we will soon be establishing as a payment plan on our legal bills. I've been going through and questioning a couple of things and putting together a memo to straighten everything out on Mike's behalf, and Mike will review it and send it. But we're thinking of developing a payment plan of about $500 to $700 a month to pay it off over time. But we really have not paid on legal for the last 5 months at least while we've been working on this. So there's just so everyone knows, it looks like we've been really good. And we also have the additional cost of the trust, which is we just paid $1,800 or so, and we'll have to pay a total of $3,000 more. So it's a good one.
There's another $1,200 outstanding, yes. Thank you. I did skip that little highlighter. Fleet and fuel oil was simply another area on my part of bookkeeping, in that we receive a bill quarterly for fuel, and I processed it. We paid it, although I should have held. It was budgeted to be paid in November, the next day, so we paid it on October 31st. So it landed in October, but that will accommodate. You know, next month it'll shift the other direction because that bill has already been paid.
Now I had heard that there was some question about the cost of fuel through our current system.
Mm-hmm. Tim and I actually are looking into the fuel costs overall. You know, currently we buy it through the CCSD system with the fire station, and we're exploring some more cost effective ways to do that. There's fleet cards and so forth that if we can get a better price on our fuel, we can certainly do that. So that is a topic that we're diving into concerning fuel. But that explains why that Is there then the medical equipment supplies?
Okay, when you go through and you do your analysis, before you make a decision to move off of the current system, please bring it back to the board for discussion.
Like the fuel, for example?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The other aspect of the fuel cost is that we have a memo of understanding, basically, that we are participants in the upkeep of the system. And mm-hmm. so from time to time, there has been over the past a charge of like $3,000 to redo some aspect of the system. And we don't always have a lot of notice on those requirements, so something to keep in mind as we look at the budget, but also as you get ready to report back.
Right, and good. The fuel is housed, as you know, at the fire department, and they have a generator. So if we do have a power outage, okay, the pumping system for the fuel continues to work.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm concerned that if we move to more commercial gas stations as a prime candidate, that they may or may not have a generator.
Well, that's a good point, because recently there was an internet outage in Cambria due to a severed fiber optic cable, and all of the gas pumps would not take cards during that 12-hour period. So
it's not an easy decision.
We'll do a more careful analysis on that to see.
So I did talk to Ken and JB Dewar, not to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to get fuel in San Luis, if we were to sign up with JB Dewar and get fuel down there, we'd be paying roughly 50 to 60 cents less a gallon than what the current sticker price is at the gas station at Chevron. Like Chevron station would be an example. But we would have to get fuel in San Luis. My only problem with that is it would increase our time that we spend in San Luis and longer to get back up into our area.
Right.
And I'm trying to wait.
Gas when you're in San Luis. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the problem that I'm having is weighing the 50 cents a gallon, the increased time outside of our response area, should something happen.
Right.
Not to mention that to go to the JB Dewar, it would work out if we went to French all the time, but to get there from like Sierra Vista, we literally have to get on the freeway, go down to Madonna, get off, come back around, and then, so we're increasing mileage on the vehicle.
Now, the school district is also interested in sharing fuel with the fire department, and there are pros and cons from the fire department, and I'm sure from the CCSD on that. But that might also reduce our risk of the shared service costs if another entity was buying into the system.
Oh, most definitely.
So there's some variables that the finance committee could look at.
Right.
Can I turn that off for a second?
Yeah. Pause. Let's see, I think and medical equipment supplies is up, but we addressed that there were several things. The big one was expired drugs. We had quite a few high cost expired drugs that Tim had to deal with, and then there was a Zoll monitor that had to get sent in for repair. So that drove up our costs for medical equipment and supplies for October.
What was the cost of the monitor?
The monitor cost?
I don't have it in front of me. We actually had two monitors go down. One of them was, I believe it was $352, if I remember correctly. I have the paperwork at the office. So what happened was it's actually an internal battery that went bad. It's about the size of a watch. So that's similar to a watch battery, but it's built into the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be serviced by them. So they take the battery, they replace the battery, they do what they call a flash on the machine, which resets it. They run the test, they certify that it's still an in-use, serviceable machine, and then they send it back to us. We had a second monitor that failed, but that was covered under a warranty issue from them because of a defibrillation, so that was no charge to us. But the other one has a battery that went bad, but it just wears out. It's a life expectancy. Yes, we got that was actually the one with the display panel. The defibrillation issue was the same one on the display panel, and they found that both were tied together, so they replaced both pieces that needed to be replaced at no charge to the district.
Okay.
So we came out ahead on that one.
Okay.
I have a question about the status of our contingency reserve. I know we have an account that is designed to incorporate a good bit of what we consider reserve, but in terms of unit replacement and contingency for unplanned things, I realize we're not routinely adding to that every month with revenue, but I also see that some of the demands that we're even in this agenda being asked to evaluate them. So we have, as I'm now learning, we put 20,000 in every few months. But I'm not seeing the total fund balance grow.
You do have it, but it's in your
neither.
Where we report the bank accounts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one?
This one here, yes. Total of 35,673. This is on page 10 of the board packet. Last year we were able to put $30,000 in, and that's the $30,000. So we do have money in reserve.
We have money in reserve, but that's the number that should continue to be in my head about what we have in reserve.
Correct. Okay. And we have planned to put an additional $40,000 in two $20,000 pieces this fiscal year, assuming we can do it.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that.
But I think that looking again back at the month of October, the one sheet, realizing we had some ups and downs and ins and outs and some corrections to make, but from a budget standpoint, it was actually a very good month. We had budgeted $27,000 in expenses to come out ahead, a surplus of $27,715, and we were only $266 off.
Mm-hmm.
So, from a budget standpoint, we'll call that a win. The other statement, which is the 4 months, okay, this is the same presentation, but it's for the total now, 4 months. So you can see where we are in terms of each line item, and not only the line item, but at the very bottom, we had budgeted a deficit of $178,000. The actual deficit year to date for 4 months is $198,000. Okay. So we're spending $20,149 at this juncture more than we had anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And to close it out, if you go to the last piece of paper, which is the colored budget piece of paper, which is in the items that this is the same presentation for the first 4 months that you saw here. That's why we have the green line. So this is 4 months of actual, and then we have 8 months projected, which was the budget. So when you roll everything longer, the projected amounts include 4 months of actual and 8 months of budget compared to the approved budget. So you can see here that we're $20,149 behind. There's the $20,149. So it just helps you to put it together and look not only at the piece of the month, find out what's going on, then compare the 4 months to the budget, and then compare the actuals year-to-date to the overall plan.
So given that we are at this point, 20,150, quote-unquote, behind anticipated, given what you understand,
what would you project we will see in June of 2020?
I would like to see that we are back to the original projection, where we have a slight increase of $2,300. We have some out-of-period costs. Okay, as Tim was talking about, we probably for the first 6 months have an above-average supply and medical cost, that we won't see that same run rate in the second 6 months of the year.
Correct.
Okay. So there's going to be some balancing out there. Also, we do have, and I know it's on the agenda item for the closed session, there's a potential for some additional funds flowing back into the district as a resolution of those issues, which is not reflected in here. Okay. So there's some good news. We're about to apply for some additional grants, and we may get some breaks.
Great. Thank you. Any questions from the public about our financial report? Any further questions on this? Okay, quickly, the president's report, the newsletter went out. The joint district newsletter went out with the CPSC bill. I've gotten several emails and phone call comments from the public, just thanking
already
for doing that. I've reached out to San Simeon to do what we did last time and have just the two districts that report to San Simeon and are funded by San Simeon, the school district and our district, reflected in their water bill. So that should go out as well. Mike and I have been talking, and Mike, you might want to talk a little bit more briefly about this, but our conversations with CAL FIRE, we began to identify the need for a helicopter pad here, and Mike and I were able to present to the Friends of the Fiscalita Ranch what we're talking about and how it would work out. They are fundamentally positive about it, but there's some issues related to the management plan, and we're going to continue, if it meets the board approval, we're going to continue to talk with them and see what we might be able to help identify for the community. Chief Hollingsworth is behind it, the CCSD board president is behind it, many of the members of the Friends of the Fiscalita Ranch board are for it. But there are some details to work out. How it would be paid for would be through a update of the local hazard mitigation plan and a request to FEMA, which the fire department thinks would cover the cost. It would be a very limited impact. It would have a windsock and a small shelter, probably on skids, so that it's not a permanent shelter. A hydrant or two, it would be ideally located on what's considered the East Ranch, but is adjacent to the Mechanics Bank near Highway 1. And it's an area where there are no trails. And the bank already has a asphalt ramp that is going onto the Fiscalita property at this time. So it's it's a project that would give us access by CAL FIRE would have much improved access to fight a forest fire or a significant fire in Cambria and refill here rather than having to go back to Paso. And this is according to the two top folks in Coastal CAL FIRE. Did I?
Yeah, that you hit all the high points. it's a project that I think everybody that I've talked to, or that we've talked to so far, is in favor of the concept. It's a high value, low impact project. We want to be sensitive to the Fiscalita Ranch environmental concerns, but it appears so far, and this is just an exploratory project at this point. We're trying to find out all the details. But it appears that the project could be completed where it would have minimal impact on the environment, if any, and would have maximum benefit to the community for either medical evacuation, bringing in supplies from the outside in the event of a disaster where we were cut off geographically from the rest of the world, and of course firefighting as well. So
we'll keep you up to date. We didn't need to ask for any money at this point, or we don't foresee that there will be any fiscal impact of this effort. And it's kind of come out of the outreach we've done as a part of bringing Mike on board and introducing him to some of the key players and then having a chance to have these conversations.
Good.
Committee report?
Healthcare Advocacy Committee did not meet, but the Strength and Balance classes concluded last Tuesday. Those who continue to participate for the entire 8 weeks were sad to see it end. We're looking at doing another series of classes starting in April. The county's willing to come and provide two consecutive classes on one day a week, so we're probably looking at fall prevention, which is 6 weeks followed by 2 weeks of healthy aging, and then have a short break, and then for those who will stay, to then continue the balance and exercise class, which, you know, it's done mostly in chair, but I came every time, and I left feeling very relaxed. So
we would recommend it to all of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the community really likes it, so we'll continue that. That's the only thing I have planned with that at the moment.
Thank you. It's a bit out of order, but do you want to discuss grants?
Sure.
On the mic already.
We can talk about the grants and awards. We did a kind of a last minute yeoman's effort to put in a submission to Firehouse Subs Public Safety Foundation for one item, and you're asking for an automated chest compression device.
And that's on the agenda later.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Well, so we worked on that. I did find out today that the FEMA grant announcement will come out December 2nd, and the deadline for submission will be January 12th. So happy holidays to all of us. But we're, you know, that grant is half, it's 50% complete, so we're two guys should get up. That's what we're looking for now. Oh, and I got to see the demonstration of the automated chest compression device today, and it was very impressive. It's very quick to use, and if you ever see it, you know you're in trouble if you have that put on your body.
Well, if you notice that it's being put on, you probably...
Well, you wouldn't notice it.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on.
Yeah.
So thank you for any questions for Lauren. Any questions from the public? I have to ask. Bill.
The Finance Committee did not meet formally here in the last month, but individually the members of the Finance Committee have been providing aid and assistance, advice and counsel to Mike and staff about a number of things. The two major, I think, are, and Mike will be reporting on this later, is potentially bringing the ambulance billing in-house. We've been providing some input to Mike on that. And the other one is we had a nice meeting the other day with staff looking at financial reporting and going through what's in the packet, what it means, how it fits with other items in the packet. And the product, it's still a work in process, but the reporting, the financial reporting product in the monthly board package will be improving month over month in the future. Mm-hmm.
Much appreciated.
The additional information, the way you described it most recently, is really helpful. It's amazing what it adds to your understanding and shortens your amount of questions.
Right, and it gives you a reference. You know, did we do good or bad? Look at the budget piece.
Yeah, it's reassuring, and it could be concerning, I guess, but at this point it's reassuring. Thank you for the hard work. And now we move to regular business. The first item is the discussion of a change in our billing process.
Okay.
And the material you might wish to review is on page 42 of the board packet.
Let's see. Actually, it's 41, I believe. On my pack, page 41. Yes, we have a proposal here to, I've been evaluating our EMS billing services that we currently outsource to a company called ProfitMax. And I've been able to analyze the cost of that service as well as the return cost-benefit analysis. And as you reviewed the report in your packet, I went into great or went into some detail of the concerns that we had on the level of service that we're getting at this point being less than optimal, let's say, for several reasons. And the concerns we've had patient complaints to our office on just accessibility, people trying to call and pay their bill to ProfitMax and not getting able to connect at all, or not getting well cared for, in our opinion, or my opinion. They also are not able to process any type of credit cards. We do that in the office after it's referred to us. Their fees are based on a per invoice basis or percentage. It runs approximately $2,400 a month. That's what we're paying currently for their services. It can vary depending on the amount of collections that month. Roughly, again, approximate numbers, the amount, the variable between, or the relationship between billable and collected is around 20%. As I did survey local providers as well as some people in the national, around the country, the general range in our industry of EMS or ambulance services, somewhere in the range of 27 to 30% is typical. So I believe that is below par. Then we also noticed as we were looking over the details that the accounts receivable, our 120-day column has quite a bit of funds sitting in it that are not readily explainable. And we've reached out to them, or we've looked at their documents that we have access to as far as comments and so forth, and the these, what I refer to as stagnant accounts, have either no or very poor log details on their documents. So it makes it difficult for us to even assess why that is. And I'm concerned that, and perhaps Bill can answer this or shed some light on, I believe that when you have a large amount of money sitting or asset, potential asset sitting in that column, it's actually a liability when we may account against us, say, for other financial activities, loans or insurance or whatever, that's looked on as a liability and either should be taken care of or written off at some point. It appears to have snowballed to a large figure. And also this company that we deal with, they do not specialize in EMS billing. So that being said, that was the net concerns, and so I began looking at what are our options, and we have excuse me, a couple of options I listed here to outsource it to someone else, to another provider. Whitman Enterprises responded to my request for a quote, and CCHD has utilized them in the past. With mixed reviews, but they are a California EMS billing service, and they would charge a similar type fee, 4.5% of our net collections on a 5-year contract, or if we entered a 7-year contract, it would drop to 4.25%, but the cost would be approximate. Unless the collections went up, then it would be higher than what we pay now. And they want a minimum of a 5-year contract if we do that.
Did they give you an estimated recovery rate?
They did. They estimate it's around the 26-27% is typical for them. And then San Luis Ambulance, we had a discussion with them. Their in-house billing department would be willing to take us on as our claims. Their fee structure would be different in that it would be a $30 per invoice, which would average around $1,500 a month would be the cost for that. However, what is concerning is that they would require us to change our infrastructure to the Simon product, which is promulgated from American Ambulance and their IT department. That's what they use, where we use ImageTrend. So there would be some costs per month of change in that, and of course startup costs of hardware, which I've outlined there as well. So that I looked at those two options just for comparison of other outsources. However, as I dove into the billing in-house possibility and option, I found some, I believe, some very important key elements to that. And it would we have, with our recent acquisition of a new administrative assistant, Simone, who's here, she has extensive experience in medical billing, and would she feels comfortable that she could handle our billing services quite well at a higher level of performance based on what she's seen so far. She's been looking at Profit Max and looking at our accounts and all those pieces of the puzzle, and feels her recommendation is that she could handle it quite well and likely to improve the not only the collection rate, the level of cash flow into the district, but the even equally, or maybe perhaps more importantly, the level of customer service. Follow-up calls with patients, follow-up calls with the providers, with the hospitals to get additional information, all of those type of things would be improved by having it done in-house. To that end, we would need to utilize a third-party either software or cloud-based system to facilitate just the nuts and bolts of that working. I recruited multiple quotes. Three that stood out and responded well were listed there. The MP Technologies with their advanced claim product, AIM with their product, and then Zoll, who we currently use their EKG monitors. They also have a billing, cloud-based billing solution as well. And I got quotes from all of them. I have set up demos with the first two, MP Technologies and AIM. My initial recommendation that's listed here was to go with the AIM product. I'm impressed by their response to my request. They've been very, very good, and the cost is beneficial for their product, and it is designed specifically for ambulance billing. We would do it. Simone and the staff, our new part-time bookkeeper and clerical assistant, would work with the three of us. Would work on this system, and that is my current recommendation in here. However, I will tell you that I've had additional information come in the last couple of days from MP Technologies that is quite interesting. So I've set up a demo with both of them, an online kind of a webinar demo, and I want to take a more in-depth look to look at those to decide which one would benefit us the greatest cost benefit. MP Technologies is more costly. So, that's why I had I'm still looking at AIM. Zoll is the most expensive, so I have not pursued them any further. They're quite a bit more expensive. They look at an annual minimum of 1,500 invoices, which we are not likely to reach that level of volume in my lifetime based on predicted increases. So they tend to deal with much larger entities, so they may not be a good fit for us. Where AIM and MP technologies, both will scale down their quotes to the level that we are, and they have. So the fiscal impact at the that I have at the bottom is, well, let me back up a little bit. Part of my recommendation is that we do this, if the board approves, we'll begin the process to phase in this project in implementation over a 60 to 90 day period. We want to make sure it's a smooth transition, that we're careful, that we get everything, the necessary computer infrastructure setup, all those kind of things, training, which both AIM and MP Technologies provides as part of the package as training for Simone and staff. And we would do a mirror of we would take, say, the first 30 days or so, we would test the system. Simone would actually process claims and send them to, say, for example, Medicare. And you can do that in a fashion, she's familiar with how to do that, where it's a test. They don't actually generate a check from that. So we're not double billing. We would continue having Profit Max in place until we are ready to transition. I've studied their contract, the existing agreement we have with them. We have a 30-day window that we can notify them to that we're going to not use their services any longer, but I would not do that until we are ready, until we've tested the new system and worked out any issues that we may have. So there would be the idea that is that we would phase this in over a 60 to 90 day period so that we have a smooth transition and we don't disrupt any kind of services to the public or to our district internally. So the actual costs for startup and so forth, depending on which of the two vendors we get, for example, with the AIM, they charge a initial setup fee of $2,500 and then a recurring monthly fee of $370. But we're looking at the projected increase in revenue if we increase our collection rate by between 7 and 10%. From what it is now, we're looking at approximately $3,700 to $5,300 per month, or around $45,000 to $64,000 annually is predicted. Of course, it may vary from there, but that's the prediction based on the available information. And you have, I did give you the current Profit Max contract, as well as the AIM, and I believe supplementally I sent you the MP Technologies data.
I didn't see. I got so much at the end.
I know. We sent a lot of paper, a lot of emails. So questions, discussion.
Mike, it sounds like this is well done and presented, but in reality, still a work in progress in terms of. You're going to demo MP Technologies and AIM, and based on that, you're going to either decide to continue to pursue in-house, select one of those, negotiate a contract, okay, and then set up a timeline for implementation. And at this point, I'm not willing to approve one of the other options that you have because we just, as you said, you just don't have enough information yet. I think that maybe the board could make a motion, depending on what the president would like to do, to approve the pursuit of bringing it in-house. But until we've selected a specific vendor and have a specific contract and have a specific timeline, I think you need at that point to come back and get board approval to do that.
I agree. Based on the new information I have, that's what I would recommend is to amend my recommendation to, you know, if the board approves me moving forward with the in-house billing project in concept, then in the December meeting, I could put it on the agenda that I will have a recommendation of which product to use.
Okay.
to facilitate
that. If we were to make a motion to do that, in some ways we are publicly giving notice. And so it may be that we want to not do that today and take care of the whole situation once we know what we're
doing. That would be another option. But I think there's a, if I may speak for the board, there's a sense that you're headed in the right direction in doing this, and you should continue to pursue it and come back with a formal proposal when you're ready.
Absolutely.
Now, I sense, you know, I'm always the one hurry up, hurry up, right? So that's my role. I feel like we've identified enough problems with our current situation that, and we've staffed up to help provide the solution, that we need to get the answers to these questions as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We were hoping to have this ready for a vote for today, so I would really like it in December.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be able to give you a more concrete plan at that point.
Good. We would need the contract for approval.
Mm-hmm.
We would need a detail of how it would work,
mm-hmm.
and then anything else that Bill wants, we would want.
Absolutely.
An implementation timeline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage it to be as I would like it in December.
Oh, absolutely. That would fit my plan as well. Very well.
Especially if we change the board meeting and you get another week. Any questions from the public?
Jody McDonough, and I'd like to address the concern number 5, the accounts receivable on page 41. $69,000 approximately. And just on a personal note, that's a lot of money. And I would like to know if you have a plan in place or even tentative ideas of how you could go about looking at recovering that versus writing it off. I know that insurance companies like to put these drop dates in, and if you don't take care of this within the next 12 months, 18 months, whatever it might be, then you're out of luck. However, I know that they do have the appeals process, and in my experience, they've been pretty good about working with me to recover monies that were past their dates because I've dogged hard. So I'm not saying that's what you should do. Your diplomacy needs to be a bit more acceptable than me as a private citizen to take care of my family. But I just want to know if you have a plan in place to try to recover even a percentage of that despite it not being taken care of by the current billing company. Thank you very much.
Just a brief answer to that is yes. We, Simone and I have been discussing that, and we need to, you know, get more information, of detailed information, and find out the backstory to all of these uncollected claims, and either appeal them or through some process try to capture some of that, or move them on to being written off, you know, clearing it out. Definitely, and that's going to be helpful with the in-house billing system as well that we're already looking at. That's a great concern for us.
Is it acceptable to the board to? Does anyone on the board have a motion they would like to make, or would they like to agree with the suggestion that Bill made?
I would move that we table this until the December meeting, at which time Mike will bring back his decision on which company he wants to proceed. Potentially proceed with their contract and with the implementation schedule or timeline, so that we know how quickly we can get the supplement and stuff before we decide to go.
Would you suggest varying the word from table to delay?
Delay.
Got it.
Will
do. Second?
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. 3-0. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And now, again, getting monetary issues, the review of Monterey County contract with a discussion of data and issues.
Okay, so my report on the, it's your item 5B, page 43. I've been reviewing the district's contract with Monterey County via AMR. We are a subcontractor to them. They're the contracted single provider for ambulance service in Monterey, in that county. And there's a copy of that agreement with AMR attached for your review. We cover what's called the South Valley Zone, north of the county, the Monterey County line on Highway 1, up to, it's an area, I think they refer to it as Mud Creek, but it's on the map, it's their map, it's South Valley Zone. And we do that currently with this agreement with AMR for a fee of $1,500 per response. And then any, and of course, if we transport or have any other billable activity, then we pursue that on our, as is typical. The problem is as you're aware, is the remote nature and the geography, topography of that area is problematic for us, in that our crews are frequently, when they do go up on these calls, which approximately once a month, this occurs, that they're gone for a protracted amount of time, sometimes 5 or 6 hours, even before they return to our service in the district. And that's of concern, of course. We have to, we may be in a position where we have to call in an off-duty crew, pay with them we're incurring overtime costs and so forth. Or San Luis Ambulance comes in and covers the district and we lose revenue through them running a call in the district. So those things are of concern, as well as the just general cost of services has increased for us since this agreement was initially implemented. And then the last concern was that in that agreement with AMR, it states that the subcontractor shall bill all patients at rates that do not exceed the Monterey County published rates, which are different than what we, our typical rates, there are published rates. So there's a disconnect there as well. I talked to the general manager of AMR Monterey County, and he, we had a good discussion, but he also, what came out of that is he sent me a copy, which you have a copy of the agreement between the county, Monterey County, and AMR. Which the interesting part of that is the rates. They have a different rate structure that we, in the industry, we call this a laundry list. It's they bill for medications and other procedures that, for us, it's just it's inclusive. We just include it in our base rate. They've broken it out into all the individual pieces. And so, on the one hand, if we were to do that, then we would have to do some adjusting to our billing structure here. You know, if it's a Monterey County call, well, then we have to look at it differently as far as billing and so forth. So that's just a... And I'm not sure how we would want to approach that, but that's just something that is of concern. I would like to, the bottom line is to provide this function for Monterey County is important. We are positioned as the only provider to do so. There's no one else really capable of covering that area. It's not something AMR could even do well. They would have to come down the coast, a significant delay to provide, even though it's only once a month, those either visitors or residents in that area that need it need it to have the closest ambulance respond, which is us. So we need to continue to provide that service, but we need to do it in a fashion that does not negatively impact the district, either in coverage or financially. So my proposal is to enter into a new negotiations with AMR, although I will tell you that there's some political things going on in that county as far as their contract. It's up for renewal, and come January there will either be a new provider or it may go out to bid again. It went out to bid a year ago. The AMR was the only bidder, and their bid was rejected by the county. So it's in flux, just so you're aware of the realities currently. I had a brief conversation on the phone with the Monterey County EMS, the current interim director. She was quite pleasant and agreeable to work with us, but she alluded to that as well. She said, stand by, it's you know, there things may be changing, and but she does want, she's aware of the service we provide, and she's very concerned that it continues because they value it highly. So they're very cooperative with us as well. So I initiated contact just so I'd start building that relationship as well.
So if I could add one thing.
Yes.
One of the things that motivated me to ask to put this on the docket for discussion is that I think that it's businesslike to go over our contracts with everyone, our mm-hmm. rent agreements and any other contracts on an annual basis unless there's a reason to delay it. And we're coming up on a 2-year mark on this contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that our cost of living increases are not reflected over the last 2 years are not yet reflected, nor are the other considerations that you so well iterated.
Right. And that's why my proposal would be to increase the base fee that we charge to the whoever the vendor is, if it's AMR or whoever is subsequent, increase it to $1,800, and that would provide for the first 2 hours of any task that we do. If we respond up there and get canceled, and we're back in town, back in our district, I should say, within 2 hours, then it's $1,800. If it becomes a protracted event, as it's likely that does happen commonly, then we would go to an additional hourly rate for each hour that passes of $210 per hour, which is already what we charge for standby rate anyway. So it's parallel or fits well with that. And that would I would work with Tim to, you know, if we get into a situation like that, then we assess, do we need to call in an off-duty crew to provide coverage or have a backup plan, especially if this occurs in the evening where we only have the one unit. If they get a call up there and they're gone for 6 hours in the middle of the night, and especially with, as we alluded to earlier today, if San Luis Ambulance's ability to cover the district is becoming a little more problematic for them because of their issues, then I think we have a potential gap here in our system that needs to be repaired, and we can. So anyway, that's what I'm looking to get board approval to proceed with that, and it would increase our revenue about approximately almost $22,000 a year if we were to increase these fees based on current usage. Of course, if that goes up, then it would be more.
Question.
Yeah. I have a question. So I'm wondering, does this additional $210 per hour actually cover our costs as far as what we're paying and personnel costs? Because the ambulance is committed.
Right.
And it's not just standby. If that makes sense to you, where
right.
we may not be in use, but that ambulance is committed and totally unavailable. So is that covering our costs?
I believe so. I believe that would be, it'd be the, for example, the parallel I use is if we had a an off-duty crew come in for a standby at an event, that $210 is designed to cover the cost, more than cover the cost of that extra crew. So that's why it's parallel.
But if you're just
assuming it on hourly rate rather than an overhead
yes.
fee.
Mm-hmm.
Since the only way we, you have the overhead
right.
that has to be included as well.
Right, and there's that, and also the potential, what concerns me is the potential loss of revenue if, say, they're gone on that and San Luis Ambulance comes to cover and runs a call and we've lost a transport. We lose that revenue as well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
I'm with Lori that I would like to see you look at the 210 number and work with Bill to just make sure that it covers enough of the overhead type issues, medications related kinds of things, that, as well as the lost opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could provide some more detail as far as that goes. And actually that goes along with, as I progress with this project of renegotiating the contract and so forth, these are estimated costs as well. You know, we may want to adjust based on that.
No, it sounds like that we're not going to be able to make a decision today. Just ask Mike to come back and quote sharpen the pencil and fine tune the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it back on December 4th.
So what we might want to do is have you write develop a draft, show the draft, ask Jeff Minery to take a look at the draft before you present it to AMR, and again, this is another item that really would like to see on the December agenda, ready for discussion and vote if we can.
So a draft contract with AMR?
To them.
So a new draft contract.
Once the board agrees on the contract that we present, then we hopefully within a month or two they would be coming back to us with any changes they would want, and then we would be approving a final double direction contract.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jody McDonough, and this is probably because of my EMS background, but as you were discussing AMR needing to cover their South County area, and earlier discussing SLO needing you to cover their area, you also touched on the fact that Cambria could be left uncovered. So, two-part question. If SLO's busy and our ambulance is up north, who's covering here? Do you have a contingency plan brewing for that scenario? Because in EMS, you prepare for anything and be glad when it doesn't happen.
Thank you very much.
Now, I must remind everyone that according to the Brown Act, we don't respond directly to a question from the audience, but anyone on the board may choose to make a comment that does answer the question in some way.
So should I comment on that?
Yes, you may.
The short answer again is yes, and that's what I was talking about earlier, is involves calling in a more resources, you know, calling in an off-duty crew, manning an ambulance, those kind of things, and those are details I want to work out in greater detail with Tim. I mean, he does that now, but, you know, I want to kind of bolster that system and have a little more robust plan for that.
I have a question. It's the middle of the night, mm-hmm. and we get a local call,
mm-hmm.
and we respond with the local resident down to a hospital in SLO.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of that, there's a call for Monterey County.
Mm-hmm.
Who responds to that?
Good question.
My understanding from my service on the board is that San Luis does not.
Mm-hmm.
It will not. I guess it would depend on the level of emergency and how many people get involved. But San Luis is not part of that contract, and my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, they would not be pulled from the EMS system. to go to Monterey County.
So move up and cover doesn't cover.
Tim looks like he might disagree.
Doesn't cover Monterey County?
No, well, it's a great area because San Luis Ambulance currently has a contract with Monterey County AMR also.
On the other side.
On the other side of the freeway. So
it's not for this side.
Not for this side of the freeway. So more than likely what would happen is MedCom would tell Monterey that we don't have a unit available. And that would be what would happen because they're not going, the likelihood of them sending a unit from Via Creek to Gorda that's not a Cambria unit is slim to none because San Luis Ambulance will not recoup the $1,500 that we get now. They're basically going to say my understanding of the way the contract is you have a unit available and can respond. If our unit's tied up, we currently don't have a unit that can respond to that incident. No. So that's the way that it would theoretically work. Mm-hmm. Whether MedCom does that or not, I can't guarantee. But what would probably end up happening is MedCom would call the San Luis Ambulance Supervisor and ask them, we have a call at Gorda, we have a unit sitting at Via Creek, can we send them or not? And I guarantee the San Luis Ambulance Supervisor would be like, no. It's too far out of our response area.
It's, you know, and it, that makes sense because it's similar to my experiences down towards the southern border of San Luis County where, say, Santa Maria. San Luis Ambulance does respond into Santa Maria if needed, but they're not obligated to. It's as resources. Sometimes they're available, sometimes they're not. If they are, they will, but if not, that county has to figure something out. And same thing here. Monterey would figure something out. It's their problem.
So our bigger issue at night is if our unit is called up to Monterey and then we get a local call, if San Luis isn't able to move up and cover to Via Creek, or maybe
right.
We send in a unit from Atascadero or...
And that has happened. We actually, there was an incident several months ago where we were on a call like that and the closest unit going for a call in San Simeon was in San Luis at Cuesta College.
One of the options that Tim and I have discussed along these lines, it kind of fits this discussion, and earlier when he was talking about the number of calls at night that we're losing to San Luis Ambulance is not enough to justify bringing back the night, the other 12 hours. One option that would also satisfy this is having a pager crew, having a crew that at that evening is designated as they're on call. That does cost money. There you have to pay them a lot less, but there is a pager fee.
There's a time differential between when they could be
right.
Activated.
It'd be 30 minutes or so before they would be here, and yeah, but that may be something we may want to look at as a more stable backup plan than just I hope somebody's home when I call. Having people that agree, hey, tonight I'm on call, and I will be ready to respond to the station and man a unit within 30 minutes or less. And I can draw up the financial impact of that and we'll take a look at it to see.
The CAL FIRE, as I understand it, and I haven't checked broadly, but from one very strong person who told me this, is adding paramedics to their crews. Mm-hmm. So there may be some kind of highly creative option that we could work out over time.
Mm-hmm. The paramedics won't be in the field for at least 3 years, 2 to 3 years, before we'll probably see a paramedic up here. Chief Jalbert is working on that. He hasn't gotten all of the funding approved and all of the details worked out. But his ultimate goal is, yes, to have paramedics at all of the ALS, or the Type 1 or county stations like that. So Cambria, Shandon, all of those he's hoping to have paramedics at, especially in the outlying areas. Because Cambria Fire is already ALS, Cambria Station 10 is probably going to be bumped a little further down the list, and they still have to get all the funding and the approval and everything before they can do it. So it's going to happen, but it's going to take a couple of years.
But if we did some active modeling of what our experience has been over the last 5 years, we've somehow avoided having a crisis, but we don't want to rest on that. We want to make sure that we have the system in place, if it's affordable, that could...
Well, I think we need to understand that we can't be all things to all people all of the time.
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. That if there's a situation where we don't have a unit available, and San Luis Ambulance, even if they're moved up and covered, for whatever reason, decides not to respond to the Monterey County call, there's still an option of a helicopter. Right?
Weather permitting, yes.
Weather permitting.
Some locations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I mean...
So, but ultimately, the responsibility—if Monterey County calls us for a call and we're transporting a local patient and we don't have a unit available—the ultimate responsibility falls back on AMR to figure out how to get an ambulance of any type, air ambulance, ground ambulance, something to that patient. It doesn't fall back on us.
Right.
So, and to go back to the report with the 9 ambulances. Just looking at the San Luis ambulance sheet, it's not enough. But talking to the crews and how long they're... We need to really look at how long we're spending sitting Code 8, Code 11, and stuff like that. Because the crews are complaining that they're spending more and more time doing that. And that fatigues our crews. You know, our crews are on for 48 hours. And if they're up sitting at the top of Highway 46 for 4.5 hours, that they're not going to get any good sleep. And then they're going to be on the next day. They're going to be tired. And that's something else that we have to start thinking about. In the past, when we had 2 ambulances at night, it was split.
Well, we could change the shift structure, but that's obviously a big nut to crack. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, San Luis Ambulance, as I understand, doesn't have 48 hours.
No, they did. They went to a Kelly schedule, and they are having a heck of a time retaining people because of it. People are calling in sick. People are moving on to other jobs. And that's one of the biggest problems that they have right now is actually staffing because of the way they went to that schedule. Going away from the 48-hour shift is... They thought it was going to help, but it's actually hurt.
Well, I didn't intend to get into it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think what we're hearing is there are a lot of complexities in the system.
Right.
There's a real need to make sure that our own area is well-served at all times. We need to curtail or keep a lid on costs, and we need to make sure that the EMS system here is responsive to Cambria and not putting us at the end of the limb.
Absolutely.
For the purposes of this item, it probably should, again, just circle back and ask for a votable item on the December agenda. We would only be able to approve our side of a contract, obviously, and then we'd still
right.
have to approve.
Yeah, my proposal will be to just pursue negotiations, and then I would continue to report from there.
Yep. Does that sound good to everybody?
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Item 5D is a request to consider moving the board meeting to December 18th based on the need to have some space between meetings in order to get work done. Mike?
Yeah, it's the current calendar shows it is December, the next regular board meeting, Wednesday, December 11th. And that's pretty close to now. So wanted to know if you wanted to move it to the following Wednesday, December 18th, just to give us a little more time to prepare for that meeting. But I didn't know you've already set your calendars for the year and plans and so forth. So it's discussion is to see, you know, the feasibility. I did hear back from Director Fedoroff that he would not be available on the 18th. He's already made plans. But that's the only one I know of.
I'm available either way.
I'm available on the 18th.
I'm also available.
And okay, can I ask Miguel? He's not.
A board member who feels that he or she would like to participate long distance can call into a meeting. If they wish. Is there a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to reschedule the December CCHD board meeting to the 18th of December.
Second.
Any discussion? Any comment from the public? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 3-0. Thank you. And then our next item is item 5E, which is to look at a proposal to amend the prior agreement on the parking lot.
Yes. Background on that, you're familiar with. We have a project in the works to pave our parking lot, or a large portion of it, at the district facility on Main Street. The board had previously approved that expenditure, and the project is moving forward. New information came to light where it was recommended by the vendor, RBC Corporation, that we may want to consider the project as approved is for a patch of the existing pavement repair, and then a mat that's laid down in a 2-inch overlay of asphalt on top of that, along with striping, et cetera, et cetera. Their superintendent came to preview the job more recently, and he recommended that perhaps we should consider a more robust a change where they would remove all the existing material down to earth, and then put in a 3-inch new parking lot structure. The increase in cost would be $4,500 over what's already approved. There was and you have documents to that effect in your supplemental packets. There was a similar proposal made back in June of this year by another vendor for a considerable higher amount, although that proposal did include removing 15 inches of soil and putting in new base, which this proposal does not recommend that. At first light, this came about last week, this new information. It looked like a good option to me as far as improving the durability of the parking lot. It's a more robust solution, and the increase on the cost would bring it up to $51,000 if we have that room in our budget, of course. However, I will say that as I've reflected on it since I put this out to you, my only concern is that we've had discussions on putting together a process where we look to the future, where we're going to do some future planning, which is likely to include our facility there, whether it's an overhaul or replacement of that building or whatever. If we get into, as we likely are going to take that very seriously, because our building is aging, I'm concerned about, even though it's an amount that is appears to be reasonable, $4,500 for that increased coverage. However, if we end up tearing it out in 5 years, and these are just rough estimates, if it's a 20-year parking lot, then, but we're going to tear it out in 5 years to build a new building, then it's not maybe the wisest choice. And even though it's a roughly 10% increase in the original cost, however, there are other items that I could spend $4,500 on that we have on our list of needs and priorities. So I wanted to expand the discussion a little bit based on that information. I'm now revising my recommendation that we should stick with the original plan as already approved, and the vendor is prepared to begin work in 2 weeks, or less than 2 weeks now, on December 2nd. I've been able to achieve, just as a side note, achieve the necessary permit that's required from the county. We've got that taken care of. So if nothing changes at this point, we're good to go December 2nd, and we'll have a 2-inch nice parking lot. So that's kind of the package that I've that has come forth, and welcome your discussion.
I have one question, Mike, before everyone else should talk before I do, but what did you, I thought I heard you mentioned that there was the county was going to solve the or work to solve any water gathering in the street related to not being connected to the pipe downhill.
Right. In a side benefit of this discussion, these discussions, in obtaining the permit, a gentleman came out from county planning, the inspector, and met with him yesterday, and we surveyed. You know, we walked around, looked at everything. And he noted that, you know, in one corner of the lot where it intersects with Main Street, there's it's a low spot and water accumulates there during the rainy season. He basically suggested that the County Roads Department could perhaps improve on that by apparently. There was originally a trench that led down to, there's a storm drain about 100 feet further down the road, and that trench is, over the years, has become just filled in and is now it's level, so it doesn't exist anymore. But he said that that is the responsibility of the county roads, and he's already made some contacts with the folks at County Roads that they are going to take a look at doing that, which would improve our drainage from our parking lot. It would provide for a better runoff drain instead of it pooling there. So that was that's not part of the contractor's deal, but it was a collateral benefit that we achieved by going through the permit process, as it looks like that will help.
So you're recommending we don't spend the additional money?
That's my recommendation now, based on further review. It would provide us with a longer-lasting parking lot. No question from what I've seen, but I'm not sure that we need a 20-year, a longer-lasting parking lot at this point for an extra expense of $4,500. As our budget is cautious, and there are things that we are looking at in the new year that we will need funds for. I'm very careful with every dollar that's in there, including this one.
So, as opposed, this parking lot will last, what, 10 years?
Yeah, 7 to 10 is the estimate with the current proposal or project as approved. The second proposal would last somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 years, 15, 20 years, something like that is the estimate. And a lot of variables there, but...
Hope our building lasts that.
Yeah, it's, you know, the life expectancy of our building and so forth, and... You know, there's a lot of pieces to that property there, pieces of that puzzle that, you know, if we're going to tear down, for example, we're talking about maybe tearing down the old cruise quarters, and that would need to be repaved as a parking area and this and that. So, you know, with the unknown future of that property, I think the conservative recommendation is to just go ahead as planned and as approved and get that done. It will give us a safer, nicer looking parking lot than we have now. We're concerned about safety if someone, you know, trips on that broken asphalt, as well as just the aesthetic appearance is pretty dismal.
Yeah. I made a mistake as your chair last month because we gave a great deal of latitude to the administrator, and we did not actually see a draft contract, which I should have made sure was in the board packet. So I apologize for that. As a result of that, what we did was we basically said we put the onus on our administrator to approve a contract that was the best deal, as we put it. So you have now been provided with the contract for both projects, and if we would approve the contract that you would like approved, or as Mike recommends, it would be, we would get to, we would be approving the contract, which is important.
And as a footnote, they, both of them, the original and the amended version, have been reviewed by legal, so they're, you know, there's, they pass that review as far as if there's any concern about that.
Well, if Mike is recommending the lower option, I think we should support that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So do we need a motion?
Yes, we do, please. And it should be to approve the contract for the, what do you call it, Mike, the thing that...
Well, the original project contract, yeah.
Project.
Yeah, it's the original agreement that I already signed with RBC Corporation. Yeah, so basically I guess what I'm asking for is to reject my current recommendation, and by default we would go, because you've already approved the prior one and the project and the cost and everything, it would just default. The two-inch overlay over the Petromat with repair, and it includes striping and the little parking curbs being removed and replaced if necessary, if they're broken, all of that. There's some material in the back of the parking lot on the left side that the dirt has sloughed down and covering up the curb. They're going to push that back up on the hill where it belongs and recover that curb, so it'll look nice when they're...
And what we would be approving if we approve that is still over the $30,000 that was roughly estimated.
Yes, we had no bids that came in when we looked at that.
So we still aren't going over budget, but not by as much if we...
Well, we're not going over the overall budget for the property. Mm-hmm.
Right. The one that...
We're just approving the lesser amount. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Just basically sticking to the original plan.
Which we've already approved?
Well, we approved it, but inadequately.
Oh, well.
So
we need a motion to approve the RBC...
Letter of agreement. Or
the original agreement.
Two and a half inch.
I think it was. 46,500, I think, was the original.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion that the board approve the repaving project on Main Street using the vendor RBC, using their original quote and specifications in the amount of $46,500.
Second.
Any discussion? Any discussion from the public? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. 3-0.
Thank you.
Declaration of future agenda items. We have a couple of bringbacks from this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that would you like to have any items related to grant
seeking? I believe we will have the AMG grant available by December 13th, because if we do, we
check the
for a board. So I'd like to bring it to the board just to release the name that we're asking for. And we should have an exact dollar amount of what 5% might be if you're a board member.
Sure.
Bill?
Don't have anything.
We have the annual reorganization of officers.
I just want to make a statement right now that I will not be able to move up into the president's seat.
I'm going to take Lori out to lunch and give her several glasses of wine, and so we don't have to take that on quite yet. And maybe five turkeys.
And I think we approved changing the bylaws. That was not automatic.
Yes,
it was not.
Not automatic.
Right. Any other items?
Yep.
Okay. Well, there being no further business, we are adjourned to closed session. Thank you all very, very much.
Now you're off. Are you going back?
I'm going back to the station.